Hey everybody, it's Clay Pigeon. Welcome to this episode of The Dusty Show on today's WFMU. I'm glad that you've taken the time to tune in. I'm excited about this show. It's going to be all about Jaco Pastorius, some say the greatest bass player who ever lived. Pastorius exploded onto the scene in 75 with his solo album. He was signed by Bobby Columbi, the drummer of Blood, Sweat, and Tears, to a record deal. Bobby had become an A&R man. That solo album was critically hailed and the fans loved it too. Jaco was on his way. He played with Weather Report for, gosh, maybe 6 years before he decided he had to do his own thing with his word-of-mouth big band. But about 1982, things started to unravel for Jaco Pastorius. Touring in Japan with his word-of-mouth big band, Jaco began to behave more and more erratically. He shaved his head and smeared his face with makeup. He threw his bass guitar into Hiroshima Bay. Upon returning home, he was admitted to a hospital and prescribed lithium. Things got so bad, Jaco was living on the streets in New York. He was committed to Bellevue. Back in Florida, at a Santana concert, he taunted the guitar maestro, and he was evicted from the event. Later that night, Jaco went to a bottle club where he kicked in a window. A bouncer beat him, fracturing bones in his face. Jaco fell into a coma. He had a brain hemorrhage. On September 21st, 1987, Jaco Pastorius died. Did his bipolar condition, as terrible as it was, somehow contribute to his great creativity? Perhaps. One thing's certain, the artistry, the genius of John Francis Anthony Pastorius III, Jaco, the greatest bass player who ever lived. Music, where a celebration was taking place in honor of Jaco's birthday and to announce the cinematic debut of Jaco, a documentary film, which is exactly that, a new documentary about Jaco. One of the guests in attendance was Jaco's eldest son, Johnny Pastorius. Here's that conversation for you on The Dusty Show.
Can I call you Johnny?
Yeah, Johnny's good. Okay. John, I'm many hours.
Maybe right here.
There go.
Hey, everybody, it's Clay Pigeon from WFMU, and I have the distinct pleasure and honor of speaking with Johnny Pastorius. How are you, man?
Doing good.
Welcome to New York. Yeah. It's kind of a cold and rainy day.
Yeah, it's one of the things I look forward to is seeing the buildings. When I flew in, couldn't even see one building. You can't even see the Empire State Building right now. So it's a little murky here today.
It's a special day. We have Robert Trujillo here from Metallica. And there's a new Jaco film. I should mention, I'm sure when people recognize your famous last name,
Pastorius, yes,
putting two and two together, you're Jaco's son.
Yeah, I'm John Francis Pastorius IV.
Oh, are you really? You share the whole name.
Yeah. And my son's Johnny V.
And your brother, Felix.
Felix.
Now, you guys are twins.
Right? No, that's the other two. That's Felix and Julius. I'm 42. They are 33.
The new. Tell us just a bit about the film.
The film is a very. I think it's a pretty honest portrayal of my father, Jacob Astorius, a person we love, a person that we felt is, you know, very, very important, you know, historically, musically, and personally. And for me, it's a cathartic, you know, kind of experience, just because ever since he passed away, it's just felt like my duty to get something like this done, you know. And, I mean, we're trying to reach the bassist, the drummers, you know, the guys in the world, but at the same time, present our father to the world and make it palatable for a novice as well as the professional. So it's an honest portrayal as well. You know, not avoid the realities, the harshness of his life, but at the same time celebrate, you know, his wonderful contribution as a person, as a family man, and as a musician.
From his debut solo LP, simply titled Jaco Pastorius, this is Jaco playing Donna Lee, written by Miles Davis, originally attributed to Charlie Parker. Donna Lee, Jaco. From Jaco the film, this is Pat Metheny speaking about Jaco.
Another thing about Jaco is, I mean, I have heard, of course, every Jaco imitator on earth, you know, now for 30 years try to do the Jaco thing. And I've never really heard anybody even come close to it. I mean, as much as people are good and you know, I think it's fine that everybody is inspired by Jaco, it's, to me, it's sort of a, you know, it's. I think everybody should just move on and not even try to do it, because it's never going to happen. Nobody will ever do anything like that.
Listenership as far as music is concerned. But for those who aren't familiar, Jaco Pastorius revolutionized the bass in the 70s. He truly did. Probably not since Mingus had someone so significantly altered the terrain as far as bass playing, composition. Revolutionary artist, but sadly, he descended due to what I understand was a bipolar.
Bipolar, yes, yes.
Yes. And it's sad to think that today, with all the advances we've made medically and rehabilitation, that he might still be alive.
When you sit down and reflect back, it's like the what ifs. You know, I really believe, and we'll never know, but I believe he would have gotten better, because that was in the early stages of medicine and psychotherapy and that kind of stuff. It was like, you know, it was, had a bad stigma back then. You know, oh, he's just crazy. You know, and, you know, back then they probably prescribed two drugs. You know, it was either lithium or, you know, whatever else they're doing at the time. And, you know, my sister is also, you know, it was just whatever way genetically it works. the men don't, you know, because I couldn't get it because of whatever Punnett Square it was, you know, but my sister is actually bipolar as well.
Okay.
And she was diagnosed.
That's the awareness.
Yes, but she was diagnosed right after my dad passed away. And it's been, what, 87, so almost 30 years now, 28 years. And she's still having, what's the word I'm looking for, different meds prescribed. You know, it's always tinkering with the right balance. So
and they're not the most pleasant meds.
No, no. And, you know, she's going through a lot of different, and they're good, and then that, you know, that peaked. I mean, then you got to try something, you got to tinker a little bit. That's what I'm looking for. It's a tinkering. It's kind of a, you know, a experiment as you go thing with it. And she's been doing incredibly well. And I mean, she's fully functioning, a great, incredible mother, you know. She's actually singing right now. This is her. And, you know, through that and through, you know, seeing her, her success with meds and see her, you know, very, very transparent and honest. She's written some stuff about it as well. With her battle with depression, it makes me really confident that, or I guess wishful, that he was here to have gone through that same transformation.
A person like that is never gone. Because time is only, time as we know it is not really time. I think there's only one time. And when you speak about someone and you think about someone in the moment now, then that's what it is now. Not that it was almost 20 years ago, but that it is now. And therefore these people will never die. And there's nothing to miss, it's the whole thing, it was fun. And one should never cry that it's over with. One should be happy that it was.
Poignant thoughts from Joe Zawinul, the leader of Weather Report. That footage courtesy of weatherreport.com. Now more with Johnny Pastorius on The Dusty Show. Stay with me.
I think in every, as corny as it may sound, in every tragic situation, there usually is a silver lining.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
So if some awareness came of that.
Absolutely.
How old were you, Johnny, when your father passed away?
I was 13. I was actually 30 days from being 14. It was September 21st. My birthday's October 20th.
What do you remember about your dad? Let's stepping away from the bass and the music. What do you remember about the man?
You know, my sister wrote a piece, not to copy what she said, but it's, you know, to her, she said her best is daddy, just daddy to me. He was just daddy. It was just a normal existence as a family. You know, it was a lot of sports, a lot of beach, a lot of parks and sun and fun, and no real pressure musically whatsoever. It was more about going out and having fun. And I remember him, you know, with him, it was that aspect. I mean, at that point, there was no cable TV. It was three channels.
Yep.
You know, cell phones, no computers, no yep. Nothing. So it was, you had to go out and find your fun. And we found that fun every day. Fun. And at the same time,
and you kind of before Bobby Columbi came along, you didn't have a lot of money.
No, we were broke as a joke, man. My first baby care crib was a box that my literally a box that my uncle, who's an artist, made a beautiful landscape on it and made it very nice. But it literally was about, and our bed after that was a door with an egg crate on top of it, you know, laid on the side. So. But we never felt like we were missing anything. When I was young, it was just, you know, that's bass in his hand all the time, or at the piano it was either bass or piano all the time. And then as I got older, after my parents got divorced, that happened when I was about 7 years, you know, I guess it's more 6 years old they got divorced, but we were still every weekend at his house. And that's the other thing, that's when he really started transforming, kind of leaving Weather Report for those last couple of years and started getting into his own thing with writing for word of mouth. And there's a lot of charts with that. And I remember it was like going to Daddy's house wasn't always that much fun because there would be yellow paper all over the floor, you know, just get charting it out. And it was like tiptoeing through and going directly outside because you didn't want to bother him because there was some serious stuff happening in the house.
This is something. This is something Jocko was writing in that house with that yellow paper spread out across the floor. Chromatic Fantasy, 1981, from Word of Mouth.
People say, Jocko, man, what the hell are you up to, man? And because I play this bass, I play fretless bass, a bass guitar, but it ain't got no frets on it. So it's like I got a wood bass, but I got an electric bass at the same time, you see? And I could never play with no drummer. You know, I played acoustic bass, man, and it was, you know, you'd be killing yourself, and you never were heard. And it was, hey, man, I don't like to be like that. I like to show up, you know? So I got my bass together. I took my frets out just about 9.5 years ago. I've been playing fretless bass. Therefore, I'm the only cat that can play it, you know, because everyone now is trying to copy what I'm up to.
We have the impression in the later years that there was a lot of drugs going on and stuff, but is that a misconception?
I think in starting with Weather Report, he started dabbling, like everyone did back then.
Because that was a hard partying band, Zawinul and Shorter.
Yeah, you know, Zawinul was a drinker more than anything else, yeah. And but they dabbled in all the other stuff. You know,
when it's a jazz world.
Yeah, I mean, but that's everywhere. They, who called it? I forget who it was. It was one of the musicians called it the Blizzard of 1977, that's when the coke really started
coming. Peter Erskine wrote about it.
Yeah, and it really was like that. It was just commonplace.
Do you think he was medicating, though, more than partying, like his condition?
Yeah, well, the drinking, they said yes, because he never had that break where into depression. He was hypomania, you know, it's called a hypomania, which they say is the most creative mind state to be in. But he was hypomanic his whole life. You know, I never saw him sleep. I'd go to bed before him, and he'd wake up before me. You know, it's just the way it was. He was just, his energy levels were incredible. I think by drinking, at first, my mom says it, yeah, that first of alcohol, I think it allowed his brain to relax for once.
Yes, sleep.
So, yeah, it was like, oh. And then you start that cycle of the up, down, up, down. And that's when he had, you know, his first real, I guess, failure in life was the marriage to my mother. You know, up to that
was that Tracy.
Yeah, Tracy.
That we know from Parker.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And that was like the first failure because he was success after success after success. You know, and he didn't take that well. But of course, then he met Ingrid, an incredibly beautiful woman, who is the mother of my two brothers. And so without that pain, we wouldn't have my two brothers who we love so much.
Let me ask you about you, Johnny, because I know that your brother Felix is a bassist.
Yes.
And his twin also?
Yeah, Julius plays drums, yes. Yes.
Now, and you mentioned to me that you play, but it's not the focus of your life.
No. Yeah.
What is it like? We see Julian Lennon, we see Ziggy Marley. What is it like to be the child of a legend? Is it difficult sometimes?
Not at all. It's just been normal to me my whole life.
But maybe for your brothers as bassists.
I can't speak for them, I assume, and we've talked a little bit about it, but I'm sure Felix would even do an interview with you about it, but I can't imagine that kind of, not self-imposed pressure, but pressure of, you know, being like a wind-up monkey, you know, because for the first 20 years of his life, it was like people coming up to him saying, hey, Felix, play Continuum, or Felix, Teen Town, without having to get your own identity. You know, it's always playing like, or telling somebody else's story about your dad, which actually starts becoming your stories. So it's like that divide of like, what's mine, what's theirs. And I got to the point where I said, Felix, don't ever play one of Daddy's songs again, unless you want to. Unless you want to. If you want to play all of them, play all of them. But don't feel the pressure to ever play one of the songs again. I think that had a lasting effect on him, because he doesn't do anything he doesn't want to do anymore. And he still plays the songs for events and stuff like that. But he's got his own career, you know. And there's no way you would ever be my dad again. I mean, you can only change the world one time on an instrument, you know?
I did want to mention to you, for what it's worth, that I saw your dad perform on the Heavy Weather tour in Omaha, Nebraska.
Prince recently tweeted about it. Yeah. He said they just don't make bands like Weather Report anymore. You know, there's nothing like them around. And, you know, actually that Heavy
Except
Weather...
Except maybe Mahavishnu, who to me was at the same time. What an exciting time in music that
But
was.
He's not playing like that anymore. You know, I mean, just that period in time, you know, Mahavishnu, or you know, Weather Report, even all the, you know, Billy Cobham back in the day, all these guys were going, George Duke, these guys were playing some different stuff, man, and just very new and fresh. And Mahavishnu, you know, McLaughlin's an incredible, you know, Return Forever also.
That whole band too, Cobham and Jan Hammer.
Yeah, absolutely, man, yeah. It's incredible.
Here is the Mahavishnu Orchestra from Birds of Fire, the title track, Dusty Show.
Not to change the subject, but you must be incredibly grateful for what Robert Trujillo from Metallica is doing. And...
Oh, totally. We've been friends way before the idea of this happened. You know, from the day I met Robert, like literally the first day I met him, it was like, man, you got to do a movie on your dad. Yeah, and I'm like, I know, we've been trying to pull together for a long time. You know, Robert, you know, as his career progresses, he would introduce me to new people. Say, oh, this guy would be good for the interview, you know, maybe try to get this guy, or, you know, maybe this guy. And then as he got more metallic, you know, from Ozzy Osbourne to Metallica and this and that, he became more comfortable in his living situation, and always in the back of his mind, man, it'd be great to do that Jocko thing. And then finally got to the point where he's like, you know, rather than losing control and having someone who doesn't know your dad, you know, we're investors and, you know, listen to them, why don't I put the money up? And it's like, we can control what this film's going to be.
More Jocko from Word of Mouth.
Thank you.
You know, Will Lee, the bassist from David Letterman, he talks about Jocko here from his website, willlee.com.
Like if bass were Fort Knox or a building that contained a big treasure or a lot of gold or something, then Jocko had the key in his spirit to unlock all those treasures inside that building that the bass had been. The bass had just been this basic, you know, basic thing for so long. And Jocko, kind of like Hendrix, you know, using feedback as an instrument, you know, because feedback had been like the undesirable thing for, you know, let's try to get rid of that feedback as fast as we can. And Hendrix said, I got a better idea. You know, and almost in that same spirit, Jocko kind of took the harmonics and the harmonies that were available on the bass, you know, and made them sing.
Yeah, well, I think Will actually took... Will took my dad's class, actually, you know.
Did he?
Yeah,
did he?
My dad taught a bass
class.
Is
he a friend of the family?
Yeah, totally. He's totally cool.
Seems like
he's a good
guy.
Dude, and he's a great bass player.
Johnny, I've got to let you go, man. And
yeah, do it.
I'll kick myself later for the questions I didn't think to ask you. Yeah. I want to ask you one parting question.
Wait, bring him on tomorrow night.
If there was one thing as we leave here that you would like to impart or you would like people to know about your dad, can you say what that would be?
Not many times in music history that a person had the ability to change all music. You know, bass playing across genres has changed forever. I think ultimately it's the most important thing is his music, you know, and that's what's going to last the longest is the actual music. And beyond that, just that he was actually a great guy, a fun, loving spirit whose life ended too soon.
Well, thanks for your time. We look forward to the film, and happy holidays to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, John. Thank you.
Yeah, bring it tomorrow night, man. If you want to eat it with some, I got buddies there that you might want to do the same thing.
What theater is it at, Johnny?
I think it's up at Sunshine.
Here's Suicidal Tendencies.
Sometimes I try to do things, and it just doesn't work out the way I want it to. And I get real frustrated. And, like, I try hard to do it, and I, like, take my time, but it just doesn't work out the way I want it to. It's like I concentrate on real hard, but it just doesn't work out. And everything I do and everything I try, it never turns out. It's like I need time to figure these things out. There's always someone there going, hey, Mike, you know, we've been noticing you've been having a lot of problems lately, you know? You should maybe get away. And, like, maybe you should talk about it. You'll feel a lot better. And I go, no, it's okay, you know? I'll figure it out. You see me alone? I'll figure it out, you know? I'm just working on myself. And they go, well, you know, if you want to talk about it, I'll be here, you know? And you'll probably feel better if you talk about it. So why don't you talk about it? I go, no, I don't want to. I'm okay. I'll figure it out myself. And they just keep bugging me. They just keep bugging me. There's pills on the side. It's got to be a suicide. So come and bring what's inside. You won't have it. Then I bring what's just to see the way. I'm not drinking. Here's the desire. You're the one I'm drinking. Here's the desire. You're trying to be crazy. Here's the desire. They take me in and it's doing good. Then what's the only solution to give me needed professor? I'm protecting from the enemy.
Help! Help!
I was in my room, and I was just like staring at the wall, thinking about everything, but then again, I was thinking about nothing. And then my mom came in, and I didn't even know she was there. She called my name, and I didn't hear her, and then she started screaming, Mike, Mike! And I go, what? What's the matter? She goes, what's the matter with you? I go, there's nothing wrong, Mom. She goes, don't tell me that. You're on drugs. I go, no, Mom, I'm not on drugs. I'm okay. I'm just thinking, you know? Why don't you give me a Pepsi? She goes, no, you're on drugs. I go, Mom, I'm okay. I'm just thinking. She goes, no, you're not thinking. You're on drugs. Normal people don't act that way. I go, Mom, just give me a Pepsi, please. All I want is a Pepsi. And she wouldn't give it to me. All I wanted was a Pepsi. Just one Pepsi. And she wouldn't give it to me. Just a Pepsi. She was doing with her knees. Not really back to be a thief. Just yucky, just lazy. It's so good that I'm crazy. I'm not crazy. I was sitting in my room, and my mom and my dad came in. They pulled up a chair and they sat down. They go, Mike, we need to talk to you. And I go, okay, what's the matter? They go, me and your mom, we've noticed lately you've been having a lot of problems. And you've been going off for no reason. And we're afraid you're going to hurt somebody. And we're afraid you're going to hurt yourself. So we decided that it would be a
decided my best interest? How do you know what my best interest is? How can you say what my best interest is? What are you trying to say? I'm crazy? When I went to your school, I went to your churches, I went to your institutional learning facilities. So how can you say I'm crazy? Say no to people crazy. It's up to them, I think. By the time they think my head, mentally, I'll be dead. I'm not crazy. Here's the concern. You're the one that's crazy. Here's the concern. You're trying to be crazy. Here's the concern. They kick me in and get through to say what the only search you can need. But that's what I'm protecting from the enemy myself.
Mr. Chirillo, can I call you Robert?
Yeah.
I'm talking to Robert Chirillo from Metallica. And weren't you with Suicidal Tendencies long ago?
Yes, Suicidal Tendencies.
Infectious Grooves.
Infectious Grooves.
But today we're here to talk about someone I know who's near and dear to you, Jaco Pastorius.
Correct. Yeah.
We've got a new film that starts here in New York City tomorrow night. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's been a six-year journey for me. It's a documentary film about my biggest influence, Jaco Pastorius. Jaco was an incredible pioneer of the electric bass, but he had this amazing story, which it's fairly tragic, but at the same time, there are bright moments in his life that are super special and important. So I saw him play in 1979 in it was in 79. I think it was in support of their 830 album. But it was really, really a special moment for me because I saw the edge and the attitude that he brought on stage, and I also the mystery man that I had only seen like really interesting photographs of and stuff. We didn't have the internet back then, so you'd literally have to go to the record shops and check out the vinyl. And
can you go best a step further and tell me what your first introduction to Weather Report and Jaco was?
Well, I had a friend, a buddy of mine that I played music with when I was in elementary school, and I didn't play bass back then. I would just dabble in guitar and a little bit of drums, and his brother, though, was a bass player, and his brother would talk about Weather Report in this Jaco character, and he played, I think, I think the first music I heard from Jaco was actually off the Heavy Weather album, and it might have been Teen Town, because that's the one that really kind of hit me the hardest, you know, kind of blew me away. And then soon after, I discovered his solo album and discovered tracks like Portrait of Tracy. And when I heard Portrait of Tracy, I didn't even know what kind of instrument it was, because it was so unique and different. It's kind of like the first time I heard Eruption by Eddie Van Halen. I didn't know
exactly.
I didn't know what instrument that was.
And
it
not
was like,
not to mention the I don't know about you, but the emotional impact of the composition, it just goes right into you.
Oh yeah, it was a really, really inspiring moment to hear the instrument being played this way on so many different levels, on an aggressive level, whether it was incorporating that sort of almost a distorted, like you know, like a metallic almost flavor to his sound in the feel, and then all of a sudden he's playing you something that's so beautiful and and the composition was so dynamic. And again, very classical almost, and that was a special moment for me too, with Portrait of Tracy, of course. Special moment for me.
Here is Jaco Pastorius with Portrait of Tracy. Thank you.
Listen to the album, there was just all kinds of different adventures that he would take in music. You know, Come On, Come Over was super funky.
Sam and Dave.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you think that was Bobby Colombi's idea?
You know what? I think it was his idea. And Bobby's actually become a pretty good friend of mine since we made this film. And
For our listeners, in case you don't know, that would have been Blood, Sweat, and Tears drummer, who was an A&R guy, and his first signing was Jaco.
Yeah, he produced the album, the first Jaco album, self-titled. So, you know, it was an interesting time back then because there was so much great music and there was like a lot of unique signature sounding bands. It wasn't like everybody was sounding exactly like the next band.
Were you into Mahavishnu back
then? I loved Mahavishnu, yeah.
Two bands, even though they're very different, were kind of parallel entities at the time.
I was into Mahavishnu Orchestra. I was also into Return to Forever. I saw John LuPonti at the Santa Monica Civic, same venue. At the same time, I saw, you know, Ronnie James Dio. And
the prog that was happening at the time.
Oh, yeah. I saw
King
Yes.
Crimson, Genesis, Yes.
I never saw King Crimson. That's the one band I wish I could have seen. I did see Genesis and Yes, and I even saw, with Patrick Mraz on keyboards.
Refugee? Yeah.
No. He was
joined
on tour.
Yes for a time.
Yeah, but he was touring with, they have, I can't believe I'm drawing a blank. This is crazy.
I can't.
No, but Patrick Mraz played keyboards. He went on tour with... I know you know the band.
I'll edit it, so don't worry.
Yeah. Look, I'll think about it in a minute, because I can't believe I'm drawing. What was that? It was the one where they had that poem in the middle of the song. Remember?
Like Moody Blues.
Moody Blues!
Was it?
Yeah,
was it?
Breathe deep, the gathering gloom. Watch lights fade from every room. Bedsitter people look back and lament another day's useless energy spent. Impassioned lovers wrestle as one. Lonely man cries for love and has none. New mother picks up and settles her son. Senior citizens wish they were young. Cold-hearted orb that rules the night removes the colors from our sight. Red is grey and yellow white, but we decide which is right and which is an illusion.
I saw Jaco in 77 on the Heavy Weather Tour, and I was a young musician, and totally mind-blowing. And then the fact that he was surrounded by people who... Of his caliber, like Zawinul and Shorter and Acuna.
Yeah.
And
yeah. It was a special time.
Tell us a little bit, just I eavesdrop, and I heard you mention how you rescued that famous bass of Jaco's that he ripped the frets out of.
Right. No, I mean, that That's a whole another sidebar adventure. But I mean, the short version is, as I sponsored the money to get the instrument out of a situation that was a legal sort of how do you say, a legal dispute, I guess you could say, and it was one that would have put the family into a bankruptcy, basically. So I secretly sponsored the money to get the instrument out of that situation and get it at least within the inner circle. So Felix has had the instrument here in New York City.
Is he quite a player in his own
right?
He's
phenomenal. Felix is special, and
he got those
he's
hands.
The one guy, well, the one player that really can really capture in the most sincere way. Because it's in his blood, he captured his feel and just that whole, like, just that feel. It is really unique.
This is the Felix Pastorius social experiment.
Technique.
Do you play jazz in your free time?
I actually went to jazz school for a year when I was 19 years old. I went
in
to
L.A.?
Yeah, Dick Grove School of Music. I graduated from jazz school, and I never played jazz again, really. I mean, unless I incorporated it into my own compositions with the Infectious Grooves, which I did do. And a lot of that was influenced by Jaco, because that's what I got out of it.
Here's Robert Trujillo with Infectious Grooves on the Dusty Show.
We did Infectious Grooves, we wanted to mix it up, you know, we wanted to really, you know, bring it all together and make it a melting pot.
I was reading Downbeat in high school, playing in the jazz band, loving all the stuff you've mentioned, and then that Sex Pistols album came along, or the first Van Halen album, and it just kind of, you veer off, but it all comes together later.
Yeah, you know, as a young person, you know, you go on your adventures. And you take creative journeys, and you get excited about punk. You know, I remember going to see Susie and the Banshees with David Bowie opening for David Bowie, and I hate to say it, but Susie and the Banshees blew away David Bowie on the Spider Glass tour, featuring Peter Frampton on guitar. And I was so excited about that tour. I hate to say it. There was, I think, what, four of them on stage? And there was a mystique and a magic on that afternoon at that venue, which would have been Anaheim Stadium, Angel Stadium. And it was incredible. Two or three years before, Bowie had played on the Sirius Moonlight tour in the same venue. And he was magnificent. So you never knew what you were going to get back then, you know, depending on the show and the experience.
Robert Trujillo joined Metallica during the making of the much maligned Saint Anger album. Here's the title track. So generous with your time. I would not forgive myself if I didn't ask just a second about your band Metallica. My real familiarity with you came from, I'm sure a lot of people shared the experience, from the Some Kind of Monster movie, the Phil Towle area and Saint Anger when you were being, it must have been tremendously exciting for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was really very surreal because I came into the band and I immediately was thinking about the workload. I wasn't necessarily thinking about, wow, I'm in Metallica now, you know, I want to go celebrate. I was thinking about, okay, you need to learn the back catalog, you need to learn the new songs.
It's extensive.
And
challenging.
Yeah.
You know, and you have the whole Cliff legacy.
You need to get ready to go on tour, you need to get in shape. It was like a whole... There was a whole bunch of stuff going through my head.
Is it going well?
We're going to be 13 years in, coming up in February. We got a new album that we're working on right now, and next year it'll be out. We'll get back on the road. And
here's a scene from Some Kind of Monster where Robert is inducted into Metallica.
Well, the second time he came back, I mean, that was for me when I noticed that you make us play better, man. Make the band sound so much better.
Wow.
So solid.
How do you feel about that, man?
Well, I feel awesome, man.
You're the chosen right now.
You looked coolest.
Yeah. We want you to be a real member of this band, not just a hired hand.
Right, absolutely.
And we'd like to offer you, basically, to show you how serious we are about this, offer you $1 million. To join our band right now.
Here's the silly thing. I'm a Lars fan. I love collecting art. Lars gets slagged a lot. You hear it. Oh, he can't play, and the whole Napster thing. In defense of your buddy Lars, what do you say to those people?
Well, I say that Lars is in a lot of ways, I think Lars is a genius because he has really commandeered the success of Metallica. I mean, and the unique nature of what is done with the arrangements of Metallica revolves around Lars Ulrich and what's going on in his brain and his mind creatively. And you know, I know people want to slag his drumming, but there is a crazy madness to his drumming in terms of the production and the arranging of those songs, which he does. He has everything to do with that. So the combination of him and Hetfield is remarkable, because there would not be a Metallica if there wasn't a Lars Ulrich and a James Hetfield working together, you know?
Death Magnetic was the first album in which Robert Trujillo was considered to be a full-time member of Metallica. Let's hear something from Death Magnetic. This is called All Nightmare Long on the Dusty Show. FMU, this is the TNB.
Corporations are people, my friend. We can raise taxes on... Of course they are. Everything corporations earn ultimately goes to people.
What's your parting message? The last thing you'd like to say about Jocko that you
what
wish
like
people
say,
would understand?
A couple things you got to say about Jocko. Number one, he was a daredevil. Number two, he was really a master of performance, and he was also a master of composition. And he was very progressive in so many ways and groundbreaking. And you know, as Wayne Shorter says in our film, it's one of the most powerful moments of the film. He calls him a superhero. So we'll leave it on that, on Jocko's birthday.
And the film is simply called Jocko.
Jocko.
Showing in what, select theaters?
It's showing, you can get it on Blu-ray and DVD. And if you go to jockothefilm.com, you can purchase it there. And if you're lucky, you can see it in an art house theater near you at some point in time. Check the internet for that. On December 15th, there will be a screening of Jocko in Midtown Manhattan. I think it's going to happen through the Jazz Society here, and it's going to be exciting. Mike Stern is slated to do a Q&A, as well as members of the film team.
And this show will air all over the world, actually, so people will be looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Trujillo, what an honor to meet you, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you.
Thanks,
you.
Ben. This is Joni Mitchell with Jocko Pastorius.
The big man arrives. Disco dancers greet him. Plainclothes cops greet him. It's a small town big man. Fresh lipstick glistening. Sophomore jive from victims of typewriters. The band sounds like typewriters.
I am Clay Beechin on the Dusty Show. It's time to go. It's time for the TNB.
always remember. Here's Jaco Pastorius with Weather Report and the classic Teen Town. For listening to this episode of The Dusty Show. Everybody, this is Clay Pigeon in New York, saying tune in again next week at 6 p.m. Eastern for another edition of The Dusty Show. Thanks to my special guests, Johnny Pastorius and Robert Trujillo of Metallica. Have a great week. Until next time, take care and always remember... Jaco Pastorius. Artie White is next. And the TNP.